It's time to catch the beat from Market Street on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. Your community radio station is in the heart of the action in downtown Champaign, and Catch the Beat brings highlights of local news, arts, culture, and issues to pay attention to. I'm your host, Cope Cumston. Tonight, I'm airing the third segment of the July 5th panel I recorded at the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center. This was the second of four panels total called the Summer of Solidarity, spearheaded by Amy Rickman and Loretta Gaffney, local artists and activists. The panel is titled We the People, Advancing Rights and Justice in Champaign-Urbana. The subject is learning about the history and future of Champaign-Urbana organizing from local luminaries. We'll jump in as Amy introduces her second question to the panelists and begins with Christina Berger of Amisong, followed by Imani Bazell of Sisternet. The other panelists you will hear are Joshua Gavel of Uniting Pride, Jessica Thornton of the Education Justice Project, Rebecca Christ of Girl Zone, Avery Sanborn of the King's Guard, the UIUC Kingfisher Mascot Movement, Esther Pat of the Champaign-Urbana Tenants Union, Grant Chassie of the Public Eye, Danielle Shenowith of the CUIMC, and Jeffrey Trask of the Champaign-Urbana Reparations Coalition.
So our second question, what should locals who want to advance rights and justice know from organizers about how rights and justice really happens?
No lone hero moves a mountain. At the same time, we do remember the names of individuals like Dolores Huerta and Martin Luther King precisely because the quality of their leadership proved special enough to inspire large groups of people to coalesce and to cooperate in mountain moving. I like to follow effective leaders. They give me confidence that I can anticipate the scope of what's going to be expected of me, that my contribution will be welcome as part of a larger plan, and that I won't unwittingly derail that plan. I've been influenced by the concept of floating hierarchies as articulated by composer Herbert Brunn. Confronting any particular problem, certain individuals in the community will be best positioned to lead in the effort. But as the next problem rolls around, other individuals will be best positioned to lead. And when we are adept at moving in and out of the roles of leader and follower, we recognize one person's empowerment to lead in one particular initiative does not per se equal her abuse of your freedoms and equalities. I regularly made opportunity for individual women to share their own special talents publicly, whether as musicians in other media, letting them perform in cameo appearance on our concerts. Strong leaders necessarily occupy positions of high visibility, and we can become lightning rods for special attention and adulation, but we know we're not heroes. We're fallible and fragile human beings, and we have placed all our hopes and dreams in what can be achieved only in grassroots efforts undertaken by large numbers of people.
Hello again. I'm so happy that this was a conspiracy that they put us all next to each other. I didn't make that up. So, some things that we want to keep in mind. I'm going to say some things that are for community organizers that you'll recognize, and then some other things from personal experience. One concept around community organizing, or the first concept, these are old concepts that we want organizers to keep in mind, is that we want to make real improvements in people's lives. Regardless of what your politics are, what your particular movement is, we want to make real improvements in people's lives. Two, We want to give people a sense of their own power, because we need to go beyond the lone wolf, of course. Not to put down the lone wolf, oftentimes people are forced into that position because maybe we aren't organized enough to have enough people. But we want to give people a sense of their own power. And the third thing we want to do is alter the relations of power. Because what's the point if it's not to actually make systemic change? So we want to make real improvements in people's lives. We want to give people a sense of their own power, and we want to alter the relations of power. The other thing I want us to keep in mind is this idea. Does anybody know the idea of a root guard? Well, a root guard is someone, say, in your organization. Your organization may have a number of principles or values or goals, right? But sometimes people come to it because they feel passionate about a particular thing. So they become the root guard in the organization for that thing. And so, for example, I used to be the program director for the YWCA. The YWCA is committed to the empowerment of women, and its one imperative is the elimination of racism wherever it exists and by any means necessary. That's pretty rare. Yeah, but that's who the YWCA is. And so you have to have root guards within the organization itself to keep reminding the organization, remember, this is who we said we were, because we can get lost. I see the heads waving, right? And so think about what you are a root guard for. And we need you to stand because it helps keep the organization legitimate. It helps keep the organization fresh. It helps us stay on task.
Lastly, let's talk a bit about solidarity. I would ask you to look around and see who's present and think about who's not and think about what we mean when we talk about community. It's often a mistake to assume that we know what someone else needs. Our idea of support is not the same idea that everyone else may hold. We need to ask people what they need and we need to listen. For you, in your work, what does it mean for others to stand in solidarity with your movement, to stand perhaps in support of what your root guard might be?
I don't know what my movement is anymore. By the dawn of this century, I could no longer work in queer-specific movements. I needed to be in racially integrated and race-conscious coalitions with strongly intersectional class analyses. In Minnesota, where I live now, I have followed tribal leadership in direct action coalitions against pipelines unsuccessfully. I've canvassed in coalition to redirect police funding to the creation of a Department of Public Safety unsuccessfully. And I've caucused successfully for my socialist city council member whose commitment to the needs of the poorest in my ward simply cannot be bought off. I'm delighted to find that thanks to our queer-specific achievements of the last century, it is axiomatic in these other movements that heterosexism is yesterday's garbage and that none of these movements would be anywhere without the energy of the queer people of every description that fuels them today. I want to highlight the dangerous assumption that achieving solidarity means demanding 100% ideological alignment on all points. The vogue for canceling comrades who believe or say the wrong thing still threatens solidarity within coalitions. Activists must skillfully identify the specific goal that brings us together in any campaign and the ideological bottom lines on which agreement is necessary to ensure that we all row in the same direction. After that, we got to commit our solidarity to one another despite other differences between us. Bernice Johnson Reagan of blessed memory wrote a fantastic essay on the difference between hanging out comfortably in your familiar home space with your own affinity group and the necessary discomfort involved in joining large coalitions drawn from a wider public. We need both of those dynamics, and we need to know the difference between them. Remember my political bottom line for Amazon. Any woman who wanted to stand up publicly with other women in a lesbian-identified feminist group was to be made as welcome as every other member. That commitment assumed we would be coalescing across ideological differences on any number of other considerations, and therefore it was necessary that nothing we did as a body under Amazon's name should make an outsider of any single woman by violating her most deeply held convictions, even if she was the only one with those convictions. Talking about the root guard, attention to that commitment in Amazon has lapsed, and it has broken the muscle of solidarity that is needed for sustaining strong and true coalition. Whatever differences we think separate us here, the thugs look at us and see one undifferentiated shitty mass, and they will throw us all in the same camp without looking at us twice. We cannot make outsiders of one another.
In terms of knowing how we're doing matches with the people we're doing it for a group like Tenant Union, it's really easy because thousands of people call us or email or come in every single year telling us what they want. And I think for all the organizations that provide services, the Refugee Assistance Center that works with people who are refugees know what refugees care about because that's who they hear from. When we take things that are more coming from our, you know, we read the news and we're unhappy with what President Trump is doing and we want to do something, if we do not already have contact with the affected people and we ourselves are not them, we should probably reach out. But I think what's most important is it is vital to respect other people. That respect is when I knock on the door and I say, "Hi, would you like to elect more members of Congress who oppose President Trump?" And the person says, "No." I say, "Okay, thanks, have a good day," and I split. I don't convince myself that because I'm right, if I talk to you long enough, you'll change your mind. Nobody could talk to me long enough to get me to change my mind. I'm looking for people who already agree. And likewise, in terms of this, going back to voting, because this is my issue, all the demonstrations in the world complaining about Donald Trump accomplish nothing unless it's to motivate people to work in the 2026 elections to elect people to Congress who will be against his policies. That's how we get the Medicaid money back. But when you see statistics like 34% of all US citizens age 18 and older did not vote in the 2024 presidential election. In 2016, 50% didn't vote. If you believe, oh, they just don't care, or you decide for them, oh, it's a deliberate protest, so we're going to ignore them, which is what the Democratic Party as an organization consistently does, we can't win, or sometimes we win anyway. We need to recognize and understand what's going on. For your information, in 31 of the 50 states, if you are not registered to vote by 5 p.m. on October 6th at your current address, you can't vote in the November election. Period, end of discussion. And it was like that in Illinois until 10 years ago. Rather than presuming that only the people who volunteer themselves to register to vote are the only ones who want to vote, if we recognize that there are all these people out there who want to vote and don't even know they need to change address of registration in order to vote, and we go looking for them, that is how we win. And we can have all our pickets and rallies against voter suppression, but if there's a state where people have to have a certified copy of their birth certificate to vote, we should be contributing money to a fund to pay for those certified copies of birth certificates and going out and finding who those people are and getting their birth certificates so that they can vote.
Thanks.
Thank you.
The question of how can you help is one of my favorite ones to answer for folks because it's pretty easy when it comes to the King's Guard and the Kingfisher movement. First off, if you're a student, you can join us. We are now a registered student organization, or RSO. We will be meeting every Tuesday from 7 to 8 p.m. in the Astronomy Building. We're most active on our Instagram. That's where you can get a lot of updates, but we're also on Facebook, and we do have a website as well. Another thing that is really helpful for forwarding our movement is kindly, keyword kindly, correct those that continue the harmful traditions associated with the prior mascot. We cannot move forward if there are still people in our community that are perpetuating these harmful things. They can be wearing merchandise or saying or doing things at sporting events, but calling out these actions to work towards a better future is a really great way to get yourself involved day to day. And the last thing I want to mention is that a lot of people don't know this, but the one person that actually has authority over whether we do or do not have a mascot, and if so, what it is the chancellor. Chancellor is the one person that has that vote. So we've had these student votes that have passed, we've had these faculty vote that passed, but the only one that really has that decision is the chancellor. So we have a new chancellor on campus this year. We are very excited to see what he will do in his role. We have already made contact with him and are hoping to set up a meeting very soon with him. But getting that support from you guys as part of the community, you know, the campus is not a separate entity from the community. We are all one, all together, and it is very important that both sides pay attention to what's happening in the other location. So being able to call or email the chancellor's office, voice your support for the Belted Kingfisher as the new mascot, or just say that we need change and you want to see it happen from this new chancellor, that would be monumental to our movement. So yes.
Thank you.
The part about how do you involve other people, our reparations group is all about getting community input. We do had a town hall meeting recently. We are continually going to be looking to get input from the community. And it's really important, obviously, to get input from the community that's been affected. But we want everyone to be a part of this process. It doesn't matter what color you are, everyone can be involved in trying to solve issues of harm and repair for African Americans. I'll also say that in terms of solidarity is concerned, it's important to not be afraid of conflict. Someone told me that conflict is like a pulse. You know, you don't want going too fast, you don't want to have a heart attack, but you do want one. Everybody's going to be different. The Civil Rights Movement had lots of diversity within this movement. Any movement has diversity within this movement. You just got to have to embrace that and use it as a strength and not as a weakness. In terms of how to get involved, we have monthly meetings. Champaign Banner Reference Coalition meets every third Thursday at New Cousin Fellowship, located at 124 West White Street. We have a group of folks who are committed to making this happen. We also have, you can look up on our website, we have a repository of information. I talk about education. We have tons of articles, tons of videos, tons of research. Because I believe that if you have a heart for justice at all, and you dip your toe in research, you'll begin to realize that reparations is just like, oh, of course. Not controversial, not polarizing, not politicized, but just something that it should be a common sense. And I hope that one day it'll be normative. I want reparations to have that same effect where it's polarized now, but next thing you know, it's gonna be in everybody's budgets. Every city has it in the budget, every municipality, every church has it in their budget because it's a normal thing. Why? Because there's 500 years of oppression that we have makeup for, we've got a long way to solve it. So that's my hope, and thank you again for having me. It's been a joy to experience this panel and with you here, and thank you.
Help for the public eye is participation. We're always looking for writers. You all make the paper possible. So if you've ever considered writing for us, we're asking you to do that. If you've never thought about it, I'm hoping that if I've done my job here, you're inspired to try it. You'd be surprised how many people share your perspective. And for those of you up here or those involved in the movement out there, if someone reads it and becomes involved, that's a material difference that you're making by writing with us. And if someone doesn't become involved, but just learns more about your issue, whether it's labor, reparations, the university, anything that we've discussed here, that's a benefit. And it's a great way to channel. I'm using the public eye right now to try to digest what's happening in the news, and it's very therapeutic for me, so maybe you'll find the same kind of fulfillment with that. So we really encourage you to get involved, and we really view ourselves as kind of the facilitators of the work that happens up here. We want to project what's going on in the community, and if you're involved, that's possible. We meet every Wednesday at 7 p.m. on Zoom. They're open meetings. We encourage you to bring your ideas, your articles, or you can just see how the paper works. And while you're here, this is really like the public eye library. If you just go to the left on your way out, you'll see years, like thousands of different copies from issues that span back to the early 2000s to just a few weeks ago when we issued our last paper. So if you want to be a part of this, we can definitely get you pointed in the right direction. See me after. We have members of the editorial collective out here, and I'm just really excited to see what all floods in, because you all make it happen.
What does MN stand in solidarity with your movement? I think MN's supporting a collective process of articulating our desires and making a commitment to lead with love. We live in a frightening time that can shut us down and separate us. The IMC came from desires and holds space for your desires and your projects led collectively. Desire is the antidote to fear. It unsticks us. By articulating desires, we generate friction with current realities. Generating desires with each other is a way to forge solidarities that are forward-looking. During the pandemic, composer Melanie Demore released the song called Lead With Love. I thought a lot about what leading with love means, and I wrote this. Leading with love is when we act towards our desires rather than merely reacting to the problems. Lead with love is when we seek to understand the systemic roots of problems rather than practicing violence or exclusion towards those who speak about the problems. Leading with love is when we commit to transformative justice, including reparations, deep relationship building, and long-haul organizing. Transformative justice is when we seek a fair outcome to a conflict in a way that transforms our sense of ourselves and others. Leading with love is when we recognize every other human as a legitimate other, even in the face of anger, judgment, and fear. We lead with love when we can articulate the position of our opponent in a fair way, even when we disagree with it. We lead with love when we act in ways designed to carry everyone, ourselves, our community, and our antagonists to higher ground so that the whole community is better off because of our actions. Solidarity is leading with desire for what we want to build in community, and it's about leading with love. Thank you.
I would say a couple of things. One, I am just one dumbass person who is trying to improve things in her community, and I'm going to get things wrong, and so will anyone else who's up here. There are going to be gaps in my understanding, and people are going to point those out. And I think the way that we build community with people, particularly when we are trying to help communities, is to listen to them. It takes some degree of arrogance to say, I'm going to lead a thing. And it's really easy to build down. It's much harder to tear down. It's much harder to build up. So assume that people are acting in good faith and are trying the best they can, and where you see those gaps, feel free to voice them, and then it's on the leaders to listen to those. And secondly, remember those values that are driving you. As I said before, you only have a limited amount of time. You have to choose the things that you dedicate yourself to. Other people are dedicating themselves to other things, and where those values align, work together to push things further along.
As I'm here representing the Education Justice Project, I think the best way to be in solidarity with our issues is to self-educate. Self-educate yourself about the legal system and the prison. It's essential for understanding the impact that system-impacted people experience on a daily basis. And it's not just people who are incarcerated, people who have run-ins with the laws, it's their families. It's the people at home that's growing up without mothers and fathers. It's the siblings, it's the parents who are missing their children at holidays. Everyone is impacted by the system. So educating yourself about what that looks like and the effects of that is super important. I think the other thing that's super important as far as education is changing your mindset of what you think about people with criminal records. It's just very important. I don't know what else to say about that, but rethink and like check your privilege and check your thoughts around how you think about people with criminal records. For those who choose to volunteer their services, whether it's inside the prison or on the outside, it's important to consistently check in with your motivations. Like, it's to think about the privilege that you carry and your natural assumptions about people who are incarcerated or people who've been system impacted. EJP itself, we have so many ways to get involved. You can volunteer with one of the many programs like inside the prison through the education process, the education program, or you can even help volunteer with, we do a community anti-violence education. We do a mindfulness discussion group. We're always looking for more people to come get involved and interact with our students. We also have, like I said, our outside programs, the resource group, our policy and our reentry guide, and our policy and research group. Another way of giving time to EJP is to come to our events on campus. We have lunch and learns, we have author talks, we have different ways to just learn more. And we have a really nice community event called the Ripple Effect, where we make cards for incarcerated people, and it's awesome. So definitely come out to that. We host it twice a year. We also have a weekly newsletter that you can sign up for on our website, educationjustice.net. And if instead of time you want to give money, we always need money for books and local organizations. And honestly, support the other organizations that's in our industry. We love First Followers. We love Books to Prisoners. So there's lots of different ways to get involved. And then most importantly and last thing is to follow the legislation that is impacting our people and go vote.
Yes to all of that. It really means coming together and creating space, not just for an issue or for something that you're advocating for, but for those people who are often left behind. I think in the queer community, we still, as a wider community, need to reckon with the fact that queer people of color, queer trans women of color in particular, have led this movement and been left behind time and time and time again. I am a cis white man. I love to be able to give the space to someone else to speak. And I think that we as a community need to do that more actively and more intentionally, first and foremost. And then I think when you're showing up too, you should show up with either a concrete offer or a concrete ask. I think it's really something that we see quite a bit with people in our community who very much want to help and are very, very passionate about helping. But we get a lot of, oh, I'm here if you need me. We don't have the capacity to chase people down. If you can come to me and say, hey, I want to donate to your food pantry, great. That is something I can give you a concrete list of what we need. Or again, we're in a capitalist hellscape. It sucks, but many of us need your dollars. If your little treat can be, you know, instead of a cake pop, you give $5 to an organization that's doing the work that you're passionate about, that goes so far. If everybody who attended Pride Fest gave us a dollar, we could almost hire a new person. And just keep that in mind, that it really, really does make a difference, even if you think it's a small amount. It's huge. Same with volunteering. If you can give me an hour at an event where you're sitting at a table so that we can go and talk to people and get education out there, that's huge. We're also hiring, so if anybody wants to come work with us. But again, I think coming back and just making space for people to tell their story and uplift the people that we have historically and consistently left behind is where we need to start.
Couple things I want to say. One is the Confederacy won. We get that, right? All the explanations for why Trump is in power and all these policy changes that are happening. If there's ever any doubt, understand racism is at play.
Yeah.
Understand white supremacy won. And so we need to think about things in that context. Trump didn't win because of identity politics. Identity politics and how people do that becomes questionable. But I'm here to say, as a black feminist woman, that I got put in a position to organize with other black women because of sexism, because of racism, because of classism. I didn't say, ooh, I only want to talk to black women. No, I got pushed there, and I'm happy to be there. And so my message to you, one is we have to know our history or we're bound to repeat it. Because history begs to be resolved. And if we won't resolve this question of white supremacy, we can't even get to the economic exploitation stuff. White supremacy is in the way of a lot of what we're trying to do. What I want to say is, we would be able to do our work better if everybody did their work. If we can figure out, how do I hold up my end of the sky? And so if we as black women are always out fighting against racism, we can't get to the business of taking care of our families and being a part of the larger movement for social justice in this country and in the world. I'm asking men to do their part. I'm asking white people to do their part, people of any persuasion in terms of your understanding of your gender or sexual orientation. Understand white supremacy is running our country right now. And I ask you to join the movement against white supremacy.
Summer Solidarity Coalition asks everyone to please keep the conversation going.
Keep the conversation going. Meet each other, talk with each other. Thank you so much for showing up.
That wraps up the third segment of the panel, We the People, Advancing Rights and Justice in Champaign-Urbana. The second of the four sessions offered as Summer of Solidarity in July 2025. The first two segments, as well as the first panel, will be archived on the WEFT website, weft.org, under Catch the Beat in the Public Affairs tab. I'm your host, Cope Cumston. Happy to have you with me listening to Catch the Beat. You are listening to WEFT Champaign, 90.1 FM, streaming on weft.org, a proud supporter of the Summer of Solidarity. With thanks to Creative Commons for intro and outro music by Kevin MacLeod. See you next time.